Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Desert Mirror Zendo. Really excited to be able to welcome David Chadwick this evening. He and his son Clay are on a tour of the Southwest. They're en route up to Santa Fe, and David's stopped by to spend some time with us this evening. David is the author of Crooked Cucumber, The Life and Zen Teaching of Shinryu Suzuki. So this is the biography of Suzuki Roshi. A wonderful book. We'll have this out during tea and such. If you want to peruse it. You probably remember your biography better than I do, but you began, I think, as I recall, David began practicing at San Francisco Zen Center in 1966 and with Suzuki Roshi, and was ordained by Suzuki Roshi in 1971, and is also the author of Thank You and OK, which I think is the funniest book on Zen, at least in the English language. So we'll have some time to hear David speak, have some time for conversation. We also have tea and time to socialize. So please welcome David Chadwick.
Well, good evening. Yeah, it's good to be back here. I lived in Santa Fe with Clay and his mother. The summer of 92 to the summer of 93, and I come from Fort Worth, Texas, so there's so many old friends here, and Buddhists I've come through a lot in Santa Fe, Taos, Albuquerque. Last time, and I've done some book signings here, I remember, and there was this other Zen group that I sat with.
Hidden Mountain?
Hidden Mountain.
My
Jitsudo
Roshi group.
Jitsudo,
Or Albuquerque Zen Center.
Or
Albuquerque Zen Center.
Yeah, I don't really remember. Just some book signing, when I did book signings, I'd always just try to sit with whatever, some local group. And so I like the small groups around the country. I always enjoy sitting with them and meeting with them. And also once in about somewhere around 1980. I don't know what year. Let's see, can I remember it anyway? I came through here and I stayed with the poet Bob Creeley in Abiquiu?
Yeah.
No. No. He lived in a place called Placidus.
Placidus.
Abiquiu is further out. We were there like 5 days. The woman I lived with for 9 years back then was an old friend of his. He was from Bolinas. And I don't drink anymore, but we just sat. We had a big house, just rambling, just discovered a new room every day. And we sat at his kitchen table and drank vodka, and smoke grass, and we'd talk, and I'd play songs. And then he was doing a poetry reading, and he asked me to sing songs at it. I said, "Oh no, I can't do that." So finally we did. I'd sing a song, and he'd read a poem. We went back and forth that night, and that was fun. So that's my memories of Albuquerque. I didn't give any thought to what I would say tonight. I never had trouble talking, but somebody might have some question, might give some direction to what happens now. I don't have anything in particular in mind. Nobody asks anything. I can, like I say, have no trouble talking. But does anybody have anything in particular you'd like to talk about, or anything you're interested in? Any question? Yes.
I read your other book, your first book, a while ago. Didn't really enjoy that, but I thought I would ask you maybe about humor in Zen, humor in the practice, and the role of humor as you see it in the practice. oneself, or
humor is just part of life. It's just part of being a human being. And different people express humor in different ways, and it's just sort of natural. Practice to me is just waking up to reality. It doesn't matter what we're waking up to, you know, whatever we are. Some people don't have a lot of sense of humor, you know. Some do. I don't think it matters. I mean, it's nice, I guess. But I don't have any particular thoughts on that. I don't think it matters. I don't think people have to be funny or, you know, I don't think they should feel compelled to be funny. I don't think we need to improve ourselves or anything in terms of Zen or practice. Just need to realize what we are, you know. And I don't think we should feel any pressure to increase the humor in our lives. But, you know, sometimes it's good. Like when, what's his name who was started the Saturday Review of Literature? Norman Cousins. He got very ill at one point in his life and started watching old comedies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he felt like it cured him. He spent a long time laughing. And I think laughing is associated with health, isn't it? But whether in terms of, when you say practice in it, I don't think it matters. It's always good to take ourselves lightly and be able to laugh at things. I have another book, incidentally, just one other thing. I wrote a book called To Find the Girl from Perth, which is a novel. It's just self-published. It's just like a year old or something. And then I put out this little book, To Shine One Corner of the World, which had vignettes about Suzuki Roshi in it. And then that went out of print. That was put out by Broadway, who did Crooked Cucumber. And then several years ago, Shambhala brought both Thank You and OK back out, and To Shine One Corner of the World, which they renamed Zen Is Right Here. Or we renamed. They wanted a new name. Hope, you know, they could, you know, we were hoping it would sell more. if we give it a new name. And I've got on my website, cuke.com, cuke.com, I have zillions of stories about Suzuki Roshi and interviews with students. I have a lot more to put on there like that. And there is also shunyusuzuki.com, which has all of Suzuki Roshi's lectures on it, all of the audio, all the video, and I'll probably put up all the photographs in the archive, like 460. It's not that hard, I don't think. It's like sort of rote work, type some name and make a little link out of each one of them. But there's a username and a password on that site, which I have on it's a little worried somebody in Zen Center might say, well, you know, I think it was inappropriate to have it all up available for free or something. So I put a username and a password on it, which is very low security. So the username is Buddha, and the password is one, only if you forget it. My email address is on there. And also, the way you go into shunyusuzuki.com, there's this gate, right? There's an image of a gate. and it says knock on the gate. And you knock on the gate and you go to, there's another gate, and in there there's a square that says username and password, and if email dchad3@sonic.net for that. So that's the second gate. And then you go through that, then there's another gate, but it's all right? But in the second gate where you put in the username and the password, if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, there's a black door. And all you have to do is put your cursor on that and click, and that'll open it too. So that's a little secret. That has, when you go into that, it gives you several choices. It'll give you a link to Zen Center's site, which is presenting the lectures one by one in a much more attractive way. When they're all through with it, it'll be really good. But I just put them all there, you know. And the audio, I put it all up, regardless of if most of it you can understand, but some of it's not even understandable. But I just put it all up the way it is. Although I think I put it up in database form on one of the, it has some different links there. Like one of them's to the video, and one of them's to the lecture archive, one of them's to the Zen Center lectures. If you go to the one that just says probably Shunryu Suzuki lecture archive, that's my database that has all of them on it. So on the left side, there's just a list of all the lectures by their file name, I think, maybe. Or by the date or something, and then there's a column that tells you which ones were used for Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and which ones for Not Always. So you can go back and compare those, which is fun. And also there's the Not Always, Branching Streams, Flow in the Darkness. It shows which ones were used for that, but also There's a nothing special set of 41 lectures, which were recommended by people who'd worked with the lectures. So I indicated those. And then there's a column, it says LE for light edit, and that's 80 of them, which have been edited. It's very, very minimally, just so that they read a little better. And those are ones that come, because the left column is the verbatim lectures off the tapes, and a lot of times it's a little tedious and just needs to be cleaned up a little to read better. So anyway, that's a little basic information I wanted to give you, and I'm always eager to have anybody that wants to do a light edit of any of them, if you want to sort of check and see how it's done, run one through me. And as far as I'm concerned, you can do anything you want with it, you know. You can search and replace words. I want to get them all in light edits.
Is this year the 40th anniversary of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind?
It is, and I just wrote a thank you for mentioning, as you well know, because I've been sending you the... I just wrote an afterword for the 40th anniversary special edition of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And I pointed out some interesting facts about how it came about, a little more detail on Richard Baker's role and Trudy Dixon's, and, just different things about it. It's about 12 pages long. One thing I learned in it, because Becker Roshi and I have been collaborating on it, or communicating on it, is where the name came about, because I have Marion Derby's original manuscript for it, and it was just Beginner's Mind. I'm pretty sure that's Marion's. Because she didn't sign anything, so I don't know. But there wouldn't be anybody else. And getting that was there was only one copy of it, and an old student was keeping it and didn't want to share it, you know. It's the last thing I have of Suzuki Roshi. I took her out to Greens and got her drunk, and she brought it with her, and we had such a nice time. We went and Xeroxed it, and I let her do it. It was called Beginner's Mind, and Becker Roshi said that Suzuki Roshi wanted that's what he wanted to call it. But Weatherby, Meredith Weatherby, who owned Weatherhill, that published it, which was located in Tokyo, said, nah, you got to have Zen in the title. So he thought, so Bigger Roshi thought, well, Richard Bigger at the time, thought that Zen Flesh and Bones was a popular book, so he'd give it a name like that. So Zen My Beginner's Mind, you know. I thought that was an interesting little factoid about it. It was fun to write about. And I got some other, some neat, I have a quote from Joe in it. They wanted me to get quotes for the most prestigious famous people. Really. And, you know, that's the best I could do. And I went for, what I went for was quotes that were easy to get and that were meaningful. And I sort of already had those relationships. Kaz Tanahashi had told me once that he'd said, oh yeah, it's in my beginner's mind, is Dogen Shobo Genso for Americans. So I emailed him and said, can I quote you on that? And he wrote me back and said, oh, it'd be much stronger in your words. And I wrote him back and said, yeah, thanks a lot, we're old friends, you know. And I said, you know, I'm looking for quotes. You're a Japanese scholar. You're the only one, you know, who will say anything about this. So he gave me a very nice quote that was a little more carefully worded the way he felt comfortable with. That was nice. And I got a new quote from Houston Smith that was just based on the interview I have on my website. And you'll notice, as a professor, you might notice that I don't use ellipses. Like, and when I edit it, I just edit it, you know. I just wonder if anybody will ever care. But you know what I'll do? And I put a little thing at the bottom that says, go to cuke.com for more, and I'll do a cuke.com/CMBM. And then I'll put all of every little detail down there that nobody will care about. Anyway, enough of all that. Anything else?
I have.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could kind of highlight on the process, your experience that you went through from when you went into the Zen Center or when you was working with Suzuki Roshi,
mm-hmm.
and you know, how you you know, how we become enlightened or wake up, and also about Suzuki Roshi. I guess I'm kind of I question people that do Zen for years, wake up to reality, whatever that means. Maybe you can highlight on that. But Suzuki Roshi was a Zen master. So where was he at compared to, say, the average person who wakes up? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, did he...
I know what you mean, but I don't know any better than you do. You know, really, I mean, I can rap on that. We don't know what other people's understanding is. Only they know. And they probably don't know either. I mean, we don't. I mean, isn't life great? I mean, really, we really don't even know what's happening with ourselves. We don't know how enlightened other people are, other teachers are, or anything. I mean, people say they're enlightened, but
I mean,
what does
really
that mean?
Does anyone really say they're enlightened?
Huh?
Does anyone really say that?
People say other people are enlightened, especially they say their teachers are enlightened. Or I study with someone, oh, he's even more enlightened than so-and-so. And this, you know, and some groups are like really into it. They have all these different levels and everything. I just think this is something for each person to figure out for themselves, you know. And I think it's good to work with teachers and older students and friends. But... for instance, the word Zen master, I really don't... It seems like sort of a Western word to me. I don't know exactly. In Japan, you know, they're just priests. Like Catholic priests or priests, you know. Catholic priests also have apostolic succession. So they all have a lineage that goes back to Jesus, and they're all sort of supposed to be enlightened. And it's the same sort of thing. And most of that stuff is just formalities. And, you know, the whole lineage is a formality. That what's this guy's name who does specializes on the lineage? Japanese American Rinzai priest scholar in Toronto. Victor something. Anyway, his specialty is the lineage. I loved it. And he said, well, lineage basically, the emphasis we have on lineage basically comes from China because they were into ancestor worship. And they needed, you know, something for the masses to sort of replace the ancestor worship idea. So they have this list of people. And, you know, if you really study the lineage, you find some of these people are like made up. Some of them, you know, the one, this one who got enlightened by this one actually was born after that one died. And really, you're just on your own. and also, I have not noticed people who study with so-called great teachers doing any better than those who study with bad teachers. Then again, it's hard to know because you don't really know what's happening with other people. So all we are is just a stream of people interested in, the Buddhist path, but also in today's world, I mean, there's overlap with various traditions. I mean, there's definitely overlap within Buddhism, within the Vipassana, the Tibetan Buddhist, the Rinzai, the Soto, whereas it was more traditional for Rinzai people and Soto people not even to talk to each other. I mean, I've definitely had priests tell me that in Japan, that's their, you know, that's what historically they haven't even talked to each other, right? Whereas here, people will study with a Soto teacher and Rinzai teacher and the Tibetan Buddhism and Vipassana, and then go to a channeler and Byron Katie and psychology. Oh my God, there's all this psychology in it. So, and then there are some people that say, well, that's no good. We should only, you know, study with one person, persevere. I'm just glad I don't have to figure it out. It's just up to each person to figure out what their path is. And I do believe in enlightenment. Now, some people, they said, oh, Sister Gresh, you never talked about enlightenment. And where that comes from is Houston Smith saying in the introduction is in my beginner's mind, which I pointed out and I didn't realize. Houston Smith's introduction was not originally in it. It came later. He asked Sister Gresh, oh, I read the book. How come you never mentioned Satori, you know, which D.T. Suzuki mentioned so much? And then Mrs. Suzuki said, oh, that's because he's never had it, you know. And that was like a good joke at the beginning of the book. But then I did I have it online, the book on disc. So I did a search for the word enlightenment. It's like 115 times, you know, in the book. It's also true that as a teacher, especially coming when he came with all that emphasis on enlightenment and Satori, and it happened because of Watts and D.T. Suzuki's and the Beats and everybody, their interest, of course, in wanting to wake up and be enlightened. He sort of played that down and focused on practice more and emphasized the traditional sort of emphasis on that practice and enlightenment were one, were the same thing. And in terms of bringing things in, I myself, I like the Advaita Vedanta that has been creeping in with hordes of enlightened Advaita Vedanta teachers, all of which just sound great, you know. And I love reading Sri Ramana Maharshi. And like one of Suzuki Roshi's oldest students, priest Claude Dallenberg, who's called Ananda, I read to him a lot. And when he was in a convalescent home and then as he was dying. And we got down to reading, that my favorite thing was Sri Ramana Maharshi. But they all just emphasized to me waking up. And we just got to figure it out on our own. I hope that was a satisfactory answer.
Well, that was part of that. Well, let me conclude by saying that the book Bodhidharma, at the end of his book, he said that heaven is found in a clear and rested mind. So my question is enlightenment or waking up unfolding of this clear and rested mind? I mean, is this, I mean, to me, you know, I mean, when I sit, my mind is like going crazy, but then I bring it back in like I've got a team of horses. Mm-hmm. I bring it back in, but pretty soon it goes back. And so it's like Adrian once said at the Zentner, he said that when we sit, we go away from home and then we come back. Mm-hmm. He said, and then we go away and then we come back. He said, and then we come back and we stay back longer. And he said, hopefully someday that we come back home and stay home. And I think he was referring to...
Oh, Adrian, yeah. He's a cool guy. Yeah.
Campbell, Adrian Campbell. Oh. So, and yeah. And so he... So my question is basically, mm-hmm. you've answered somewhat of it, is, am I going to wake up someday and I'm going to be at peace and my mind is going to be, like, clear?
Well, you know, I think... I think most things we think are irrelevant. Or maybe just helpful in keeping us going along the path. Bodhidharma also said that no being became a Buddha except through greed, hate, and delusion. So, sounds like you're on the right path. Bodhidharma said, look directly at mind and become Buddha.
He said what?
Look directly at mind and become Buddha. And people said, well, what's this mind you're talking about? He said, well, that which asks is mind, and that which answers is mind. So I think regardless of how calm or whatever you are, just waking up to yourself as you are is what the perennial philosophy is, what our teachers and teachers around have indicated. But, yeah, there's definitely an emphasis on slowing down and calming down, you know. But, you know, they also warn about quiescence. And I was thinking recently about, like, if I had to get down what I think spiritual practice is to, like, the most essential thing, what would it be? And one reason is because I'm trying to put together another book, and my agent and I have agreed on something. And that's the essential element of any book, is that my agent is interested in it. That's why the novel I wrote to Find the Girl from Birth is a print-on-demand book. So what I always come down to is not believing anything. And I think that's sort of humorous too, because, like, so, you know, if you look at the popular idea of what religion is, and the way they talk about it on TV, it's belief, it's faith, you know. And when they say faith, they're talking about people clinging to some set of symbols, to some ideas. This is exactly what it's not, and it's also exactly what it's not in Christianity and in Judaism. And that's, to me, when the Bible says, you know, in the first commandment, not to worship graven images and have other gods before you, to me that's saying, don't believe what you think. Because, of course, you could say, well, no, that's because everybody was bowing down to statues back then. But, well, were they really? I mean, that's pretty obvious. That's not where it's at. It's where people get caught is in getting caught up with their own personal dramas and all sorts of emotions and thoughts that our minds are creating. So rather than being attached to that. Like Suzuki Roshi would say, don't be attached to some idea. Trungpa Rinpoche and Suzuki Roshi both used to say, don't go on any trips. To me, that's that, you know, is letting go of our attachment to who we are, the idea of self, to beliefs is the essence. But then I decided there was something else that was more important to say, and that because there's always so much, so such a big problem with people being persecuted for their ideas and beliefs, and with religious groups, religious groups take things very literally, deciding everybody else should believe that and trying to impose it on them or on the whole country, that the first principle should be not to tell other people what to believe. And then, I mean, that's sort of a social thing, but since that's been such a big problem in the world, that's something I'm thinking about, is how to stick that. I think that's you know, what great Christian mystics and Hindu teachers and Buddhist teachers have always taught, is to get beyond our conceptual thinking and just see the source. One thing Suzuki Roshi told me, that I think I mentioned in Thank You, No Care, that I've always been very grateful for, in a Dokusan private interview one day, he said, in his teaching, it's important to keep sitting zazen, to keep practicing meditation, you know. To bring zazen into our daily life, that's what we call practice, right, into everything. And he said, just keep that up and don't stop that, because he said, someday you'll have a big experience. And he said, and if you've been practicing, then that big experience can become yours, you know. But if you're not practicing, it'll just be like a psychedelic experience. It'll just come and go. So I liked that, and I've always remembered that. I think it's really, you know, a lot of these Advaita people, they're against meditation. And there was some guy who was emailing me a lot recently. I put a lot of links on my website. I think I put in a link to Muji, I think is his name. Is that his name? Does anybody know? He's like one of the new Advaita teachers. I think he's from Jamaica. So I saw some YouTube video on him. Some people in Germany told me about him. I thought, well, that guy's great. So I put a link. And then I got an email. Oh, yeah, you're always into this Advaita stuff. And he said, but, you know, they don't believe in meditation. And, they just think, well, you're just enlightened as you are. Wake up to that. And I wrote it back and said, that's right. Sri Ramana Maharshi, who's the granddaddy of all Advaita teachers, said it's not necessary to meditate too much, that 2 hours a day is plenty. Yeah, I can't, you know, the idea that you shouldn't meditate because it's goal-oriented, that didn't work with me. I mean, you could just say that about anything. It's true that, you know, the practicing or sitting zazen with the idea you're going to get something out of it is a mistake, but that's sort of, you know, that's boilerplate, you know? We know that. So, doesn't that pretty much cover everything?
It's probably very similar to what you were just talking about, but you mentioned the sort of that practice and enlightenment are one, whereas whenever you think of practice in any other context, the idea is to improve when you when you're learning to play
the piano,
a
different
or
word.
Something like that.
That's really a different word.
You mean using? They're using practice in
well,
a
like
sense,
it's a homonym. It's when you say practice is when you say it's practice is something you do to improve.
Uh-huh.
That's not using the word in the same meaning. That's not what practice means when we say we practice Zen. That's not meaning like practice, like as in practice means perfect. It's sort of more like the word to do. It's like saying I do Zen, or I don't know. It's that which practice means. I mean, define it. That which one does in the spirit of Zazen. It has nothing to do with a rehearsal, you know, like practicing the piano. But I don't know, I guess they're related. You practice the piano. Yeah, they're related. But find the definition of words that works for you. If you, like what I do, is when I hear somebody make some statement about that some statement about spiritual practice or about religion or something, I twist every word to where it makes sense to me. I don't go, oh, I don't believe that because of this and that. Like so. And so I can hear, I can talk to fundamentalist Christians, and they can say, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the truth of the way, the light, and only through him can you enter the kingdom of heaven? I'll say, sure. why? Because, you know, what was meant when that was written was that only through your higher consciousness can you awaken to ultimate reality. I mean, Suzuki Roshi said, in my beginner's mind, this is the only way. You know, there's no other way. I'm surprised that there's never been anybody to criticize that. But you know, what is he saying? This is the only way is to cross your legs and sit on his zanfu and be in Soto Zen? No, it's not what he means. What they're talking about, again, is you kind of get beyond that level of thinking and belief and attachment, you know. And that's what Jesus stands for. In Christianity, to quote the great Pseudo Dionysius, early anonymous Christian saint, Christ is completely divine mind. Like they didn't say that. I mean, in the translation, it wasn't the word completely. There's another one, I can't remember it right now. Definitely the Christian saints like Meister Eckhart. I mean, that's the way they're looking at it. Not looking at it in terms of beings. God is a being, Jesus is a being, in terms of describing your own mind. Did that help?
Yeah, no, I see what
so
you're saying.
Practice,
It's just kind of a scary thing to think about doing because you might just be fooling yourself.
Well, of course, we're always fooling ourselves. You have no choice.
Oh,
you know.
Right.
That's one reason why it's good to have communities or to have spiritual friends. And it's good that our communities are also friends with other communities. Is because we help knock each other off of our trips. And that is the basis of Zen teaching. If you look at how the sixth patriarch defined teaching to his students when he's dying, he said, oh, look, there's just all these pairs of opposites, and your disciples will be stuck on one side of it. Just go to the other side. You know, so if they go good, you go bad, or whatever. And it's just, we're always believing a lot of stuff. You know, I mean, that's why it's good to have spiritual friends. And that's just the nature of human life. And again, with the word practice, I think it's good not to use words, the same words over and over too much? Is it because it's like water torture? Yeah, you really get tired. It all gets old and boring. And things that work, you know, you'll get some epiphany. Oh, God, this is the way it is. Oh, I see. It's just so wonderful. After a while, it won't work anymore. You go, it's not so good now. It's like Einstein said, the universe is an illusion, but a very convincing one. And I'm really impressed with how difficult it is to wake up and know what's happening and all that. So, that about covers everything with me. Yes.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So in this sitting group like this, we come together once or twice a week to sit zazen mm-hmm. for an hour or so. And some of us can go up and do sesshins or retreats at Upaya or other mm-hmm. places. But by and large, we just sit together for, you know, an hour a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm. That's the best.
But I often find when I'm talking about the practice to folks, I'm often referring to things, to experiences from sesshins or longer sittings, times at Tassajara or really extended practice. But for most folks, you know, we can't do that. We just mostly are sitting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
On kind of a daily basis. I'm just wondering what you think about that, and the importance of being able to do extended intensive.
I think it's good. I think it's great. This sort of thing. I mean, I like it. I think it's the best. It's really, I just had a 7-day session in Germany. You know, with German lectures. It was cool. German word means, I said, don't translate anything for me. Because I was studying German, and I said, if I don't understand anything, I'll ask. And I know I know very little German, but I studied it every day while I was there. I was there for 99 days. I think in my case, I should do more of that. I mean, I've done very little, you know, in the last 15 years, I've done very few sessions or anything. I really haven't felt motivated. I try to sit every morning when I wake up. I don't always, you know, but and also I really believe in turning everything into meditation that one can. But if you get in, you know, don't want to be like you know, obsessed, like thinking about it all the time. Just sort of naturally turn things into meditation, and I think people do that. But lots and lots of zazen and lots of sessions. I don't know. I haven't noticed that really helping much. I know a lot of people really believe in it, but I don't know what works and what doesn't. Suzuki Roshi he would always discourage people from doing too much. He liked the idea of you know, just sitting once or twice a day. Keeping up, not trying to do too much, you know, develop some practice you can keep doing all your life. And he thought it was good to sit sesshin, you know, once a year, you know, to have that. That's a good thing to do. I don't think it's necessary to do too much all the time. Of course, we've been around people that do that. I mean, Lord, man. You know, that temple where I was in Japan, Joe was there too. I mean, they sit sesshin like, do they sit one every month?
Yeah,
it's not every month.
Pretty much every month.
I think they have a couple of months off. And some of them are 7 and some of them are 5. And they're, but God, even when they're not sitting sesshin, they're, you know, getting up at 3:30 in the morning and start off with service, which is fine. And then they sit, and they have sansen, which is dosan, every morning, which was cool. I like doing that. And then they have evening sansen, and then they have yasai. That means evening sansen, but that's after zazen. A lot of people would sit up till midnight. And it just, I mean, I never, I always just sort of went, good Lord, you know, I'm not going to do that. But one thing is, I told the teacher from the very first I wasn't interested in doing that. And I'd been involved with Zen a long time, and he said that was fine. And I lived outside and was a lay person, you know, with family. But incidentally, I was telling you that earlier. What I didn't tell you was there was another person who came just like me, but told him he was going to sit. And incidentally, I got along great with the teacher. I said, I'm just going to sit like three times a week, and I can't do this whole thing. And that's where I started saying Zen failure. I told him, I said, I'm a Zen failure, I can't do it. And he just laughed, said, fine. But somebody else that was on the San Francisco Zen Center went there, told him he wanted to sit every day, you know, and do every session and every zazen, blah, blah. And he didn't. He did about the same amount I did. Ojo-san did not, you know, there was a problem because he didn't do what he said he was going to do. So that's an important thing in relations with various people. Japanese people especially. I want to go back. You know, Suzuki Roshi's son, Oitsu, is the Godo at Eiheiji. And Eiheiji, you know, is like the Vatican of Soto Zen. And the Godo is like the head of training, very high position, just right below the abbots. And it's just amazing because it's so amazing. I've got to go see him in action. Over there.
I thought he was mostly kind of like a community temple priest kind
yeah,
of guy.
Yeah, me too. Listen, I used to go sit up and drink with him, and he wouldn't go. He'd just say, oh, I hate zazen. I'm not like my father, you know. But he was into the temple and he was really into taking care of the families and all that stuff. But then, you know, he sort of changed. And, you know, once we got older, we stopped drinking, and we used to smoke. We used to sit up and drink and smoke. Then, you know, I went back, and he was getting up and sitting so and he said, yeah, I've changed. And then he got this award from the emperor for, I think, from some of the social work he's done. And you know, some of us have sort of puzzled over him. First he was Tanto at Eiheiji, was in charge of monks training. Now he's Godo, and we go, wow, Godo. And it's like, I think he's on his way to becoming the Pope, so. you know, it's just amazing. But he is a wonderful person. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. That's true. He's very, well, some priests have a little what they call stink of Zen, or they're a little arrogant, or whatever. Or, you know, they're sort of full of it. But he's not that way at all. He's just a really nice, down-to-earth person. Very impressed. Well, I guess that about unless anybody.
We can also break for tea and cookies and socializing.
Yeah, and sit down and schmooze.
Yes. In that phase of the evening.
Yeah, anyway, good luck to us all in our practice and waking up and all that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, everyone's welcome to stay for tea and more, some socializing. And David has driven out here on his own without any support beyond what the universe can offer. And so we do support the practice here through Dana Paramita, or generosity. And there's an envelope here with David's name on it. And anything that you can do to help out with a donation would go straight to David, and it would be gratefully appreciated. So,
well said. Well said. So good tea.
And we have candy cane JoJo's to go with our tea.
Oh.
These are basically like peppermint Oreos.
Oh, wow. So.